Legally Blonde, Suits, My Cousin Vinny.
All badass lawyers, all different.
Which begs the question, what type of lawyer do you want to be?
Don't waste another second thinking, ugh, I don't even know what types of lawyers there are.
Trust us, we've been there.
Let's put a stop to that once and for all.
Go take the 90-second quiz from New Lawyer Now What coach Angela Vorpal to give yourself a clear picture of the best fit type law for you.
Go to www.whattypeoflawyerquiz.com and take the quiz today.
Once you've taken the quiz, send us a DM on Instagram to let us know what type of lawyer you got. We can't wait to hear. Hi, guys, and welcome back to the Ladies Who Law podcast. I'm Sam.
And I'm Haley.
And this week we have Dominika Fazzolo. She is a legal life coach. She has so much wisdom that she shares during this episode. So if you are, whether honestly, any age, any type of, you're thinking about the law, in the law already, or have left the law, this is a great episode for you to listen to.
Let's dive in.
Please help me welcome our guest, Dominika Fazzolo. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Sam. Hi, Haley. Thanks so much for having me. I'm great.
We are so happy to have you today. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes, absolutely. So my name is Dominika Fazzolo. I'm an ex-lawyer and who turned entrepreneur. Currently, I have three businesses, real estate business, digital product business, and then my passion project, which is a coaching and wellness company for lawyers that focuses on time management and helps lawyers to organize their time in a way they don't have to sacrifice their personal life for their career. Basically, I grew up in Slovakia, which is in the middle of Europe, and that's where I became a lawyer. And do you want to know a little bit more about the legal journey or more what I do right now?
Yeah, so let's dive into your legal journey. So
yeah, absolutely.
When did it all start? You say you're an ex-lawyer, so obviously you went to law school at some point. So yeah. Why don't we start kind of like when you decided, I want to go to law school. Like when was that?
I was 4 years old. I remember we were in kindergarten and we were tasked with like drawing, what do you want to become? And I think back then there was the series Ally McBeal and I really was a big fan. I don't think I was actually watching. I think my parents were watching and I was just like sneaking peek. And it all was so glamorous and so nice. That was my idea of what's going to be when I become a lawyer. And I wanted to have this corner office and like fancy clothes and do important stuff. So I think this was the first time I had the idea. And then I didn't really think much of it until I think I was at the junior high or high school. And that's when I was deciding between management, because I really like to organize things, manage things. So I was thinking about being project manager or being a lawyer. And I think then my family really influenced me. And my mom was like, no, you're going to be a lawyer. It's so much better. So I went to law school and I think I was pretty passionate about law ever since. I was really obsessed about like getting very good grades, doing my extracurriculars. I mean, this was a long time ago. This was 15 years ago. So I have to kind of try to remember how it was back then. But I had like really long-standing passion for law and I was very ambitious, very competitive. So becoming a lawyer was kind of a natural for my personality, if you will. And then obviously, once I finished law school and I realized what is the difference between what you think about being a lawyer is versus what it really is, I think that's when I started to like reconcile with the realities and I really started to reconnect with the purpose of why I wanted to become a lawyer. So I had like a little bit of identity crisis when I started. I was trying different roles, different positions to see what works the best. And it was the in-house for me. So I ended up as an in-house counsel. And I absolutely loved that because it was the combination of management, of corporate, of commercial, but law. And it was kind of like the right proportion, right amount for me.
So when you were in law school, do you remember, you know, some of your struggles that you had, or was it pretty much easy sailing for you?
No, it was absolutely not easy sailing. I was already working as a legal assistant for a major law firm. So I would say the biggest struggle that I had was time management for me. Very naturally, that also became my biggest passion. So I had to combine the day-to-day studying with working for a law firm. And this wasn't for money, but it was more for my CV, more for the experience, for networking, for connections. So that was the biggest struggle, to combine both. And second, I would say, and this was more when I was finishing the law school and I started to actually work as a lawyer, the discrepancy between what you learn at the law school, like very theoretical, very high level concepts, and then what you actually need to do. And it almost felt like they're two completely different things. So it was very hard to reconcile, was very hard to navigate. And I felt it was also very difficult for my confidence. I'm going to be very honest, because I was a very good student, but then I went to practice and I felt like I don't know anything. And my personality, being perfectionist, being very competitive, being somebody who really wants to be praised, especially externally, I felt like this is probably not for me. And what I also would say that is probably right now, with 15 years off a different point of view right now, or like a distance, what I struggled with is that people don't really, or students don't really talk about this, because everybody wants to pretend they have it all together. They figured it all out. So we didn't really talk about it. If anything, we all pretended, at least that was my experience, that it's easy, that the practice is, it's all seamless, the difference between school and the practice, they all have it figured out. I don't think they had, and I certainly didn't. So it was also kind of lonely at that point, and I was questioning a lot of my skills. Like I said, it was a really full-blown identity crisis.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that, the identity crisis, the transfer between law school and practice. That's something we're going through right now. And I can 100% vouch for the fact that it is not what we grew up watching on TV. It is not as glamorous as we all thought it would be. And, you know, how did you reconcile with that? What did you do? What do you recommend?
I started with personal development, and like, as cheesy as it sounds, I really started with like Tony Robbins and meditations and kind of hypnosis, because I was really stressed. And this is one thing that I think is kind of a gaslighting also from the industry, where if you're stressed, if you're very emotional, if you're not managing the overwhelm, it's kind of like your problem. Whereas I actually think it's the system problem, it's the industry problem. And of course, there's a lot what we can do for ourselves. I'm a huge advocate of, you are in the center of your life, you're in control 100%. But at the same time, like, there's a reality that we need to handle. And I felt like the reason why I'm not handling it is me. So I was kind of always looking at the problem from perspective of like, where am I not good enough? Where could I improve? So it was really a long journey of self-development. And it really started with like basic things, like trying to be more mindful of the stress, trying to manage the stress, trying to calm myself down, trying to learn new ways of communication, because I realized that I'm not able to clearly communicate my point across with partners or with seniors. So I'm not taking seriously the results of my work, I'm not taking seriously. So it was really kind of realizing that in order to be a good lawyer, you don't only need to hone on your legal skills, but also on your personal skills, and kind of not the hard skills, but the soft skills too. So I think that was probably the most important thing that helped me to reconcile that and realize and kind of gain my own confidence. And then also, it's just the exposure therapy, right? So you do more things and you start to see patterns, you start to learn things, you start to realize, okay, I've handled it before, so I'm going to handle it now. Like, I had a contract that I've never seen before and I managed it. So this time I have a contract that I've never seen, but probably I'll manage. And I think it took like 2 or 3 years that I got to a point of, okay, now I feel like I'm more secure in what I'm doing.
At what point, like when you got to in-house, how different was that than law firm life to where you loved it more?
Yeah, I absolutely love in-house. There's nothing that compares for me. And I know so many lawyers, I think you're either in-house or private practice. Like, there's no in between. In my experience, there were so many of my colleagues from private practice that went in-house and they came back. They said they hated it. For me, it was the opposite direction. The first thought, why I didn't do this before. But in the same breath, I want to say that my biggest burnout occurred in my in-house role, not in legal practice, private practice. So it doesn't seem in my personal experience, it's just really not about one is easier than the other. They're two different animals and they require different skills. And you might be more skilled or more talented for one or just prefer one over the other. So when I shifted to in-house, what I really, really liked was the connection with business, because I'm very entrepreneurial. I run my own businesses. I've always was like, I want to manage things. I want to run things. I want to organize things. And in law firm, I felt like very constrained. And I felt like I couldn't because I was like junior or, you know, obviously I wasn't partner. I wasn't owner. So I didn't really have much autonomy and freedom. And I was really craving that. And when I went in-house, I worked for two technology companies. One was telco. Another one was online gaming. And they were pretty kind of progressive, and they allowed us to manage a lot of our own things. Like obviously we manage the programs of legal department, but we also were involved in project management and launches. And it was just amazing. And I really, really liked that commercial aspect of being a lawyer, where I really felt like the connection between what I do and the result for the business, it's all part of the same system. It's one team. Whereas when I was in a private practice, I felt like I don't even know if the client read what I wrote. Like, I don't even know if they signed a contract. I never had that ribbon on at the end of the day on what I've actually created. So I felt like very disconnected. And I'm obviously very purpose-driven, very ambitious. So I wanted to see the results of what I'm doing, not just type something for the sake of it, but actually really be, you know, involved in achieving something.
So despite, you know, your love for in-house, you say that that's where you experienced burnout. So can you tell us a little bit about how that came to fruition?
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I think that's probably the biggest message I want to send to anybody who might be on the edge, because I was really passionate about what I wanted to do. I loved work, and work became my entire identity. Work became my entire life. But what happened in 2018, I became pregnant. So obviously the dynamic shifted in my life, but I didn't shift. My work ethics didn't shift. My hours didn't shift. My mindset didn't shift. So I was pushing 150 miles per hour on a highway, whereas I was supposed to just take a break and take a night off, right? And obviously physically I was struggling and mentally all the hormonal changes that come with it. Well, all in all, what happened was I wasn't really seeing it coming. And then all of a sudden I just completely lost it and I collapsed at work while I was 8.5 months pregnant. And I think that was the wake up call where I'm like, this is not about me. I can sacrifice my time, my friends, my family, although it's not right, but it's my decision. But right now I'm responsible for somebody else. And I think that was the moment when I realized how dangerous or to what point I actually got it, because this was coming for a long time. I was neglecting my friends. I was neglecting myself. I put on a lot of weight. I was not present with my partner at that time. It was just very confusing, but I did not see it coming. It wasn't until I was pregnant and I was responsible for somebody else, I realized the real impact of what the work had on me.
At that point, you know, after you collapsed, I mean, what were you thinking? Like, were you like, I need to leave the law? Like, I'm going to do something different? Like, you know, at that point, it's kind of like, this is all I know, right? Because it's your career.
Yeah. So
what were you thinking at that point?
So I'm going to be very vulnerable right now. I don't think I ever shared this on a podcast, but I literally stood up the next day and I wanted to go to work. And so I had a massive family intervention. It was the time when my mom was visiting. And I remember her and my husband, they stood in a door and they say, no, you're not going to work. They're like, my husband handed me the phone and said, you're going to text your boss that you're not coming and you're going to hospital. And I thought they were crazy. I felt they were like trying to ruin my career. I felt they were not understanding how important I am. I was a legal compliance manager at the time, so I had a team of 20 people. So I was really busy and I felt like the company cannot work without me, which obviously wasn't true. It could perfectly work without me. It was just a story that I chose to say to myself to justify all of that. But at that point, I'm like, okay, probably you're right. I should stay home. And I texted my boss for the first time ever saying I'm not coming because I'm not feeling well and I need to do some tests. And he's like, of course, take your time. And that was probably the first time I said boundary. And I never expected it to be that easy. I always thought that the moment I said boundary or I don't come or prioritize my health, I'm fired. Like, that was as crazy and lunatic as it sounds. That's what I thought. And I'm sure there are environments where probably it works that way. But in that company, it didn't work that way. But I brought it upon myself. You know, I was just the reason of my burnout. And from that moment on, I think taking some time off, having to go for maternity leave early and having my daughter just completely shifted my perspective on life and work. But what I want to say as well is I didn't leave law right afterwards, because a lot of people might think, okay, I had a burnout, I had daughter, I started my own business, now I coach people. That wasn't the case for me. I came back to the company. I stayed for 2 more years. I actually got a promotion. And it's funny because I was more successful, more valued, more appreciated, and I worked less than ever. I would leave at 5, I'd come at 9, and I would take my hour lunch break. So this was the moment when I realized, how is it possible that in 2 years of putting myself first, leaving on time, I'm not saying I never stayed past 5, but like that was the rule, 5 o'clock, I was going home. I was taking weekends off, I was having a family, and I achieved more professionally than in 10 years when I was teetering on the edge of burnout. And it started me to realize and think about my career, the time, and the systems that I have in my life differently.
You were there for 2 more years.
Yeah.
What was the next step?
Okay. So even before I was preparing a launch of my side business, which was a real estate business. So I was acquiring properties and I was living in Malta back then, which is a beautiful Mediterranean destination country. And so I was buying properties and I wanted to rent them on Airbnb. So that was already in pipelines when I started, after I had my daughter, when I had my promotion. I always knew that at some point, probably I'm going to retire early and just take care of the properties. So this is what happened around 2 years, when my daughter was 2 years. I just realized, you know, it's time. I'm making enough money with the other business. It requires much more of my time right now. My daughter is still small. This was before the pandemic. And I've decided, if not now, then when? I'm going to take time off. I'll see how it goes. I'll see, you know, how the business grows. How can I find myself in being an entrepreneur? And if it's not good, I'll just come back. And at least I spent a few years with my daughter while she was small. So it was very measured. It was very calculated. It wasn't on a whim. It wasn't like one day I walked in an office and I'm like, I'm going to be life coach. It has never been like that. It was, I had enough financial security. My husband is an entrepreneur. We had the side business that I had to take care of, and it required more and more of my time. And my daughter was small. I'm like, okay, it's the right decision to make right now, and I can always come back. And it's funny because 1 month after I handed my notice, the pandemic started and our Airbnb business absolutely tanked, like completely failed, and not because of anything that I've done. I remember I was like rolling in my bathrobe all day for a week crying. Like, how is this possible? I did everything right. I have my financial security. I have a side business that's proven, concept that's working and tested. I'm making money monthly. And now a pandemic started that completely put an end to international travel whatsoever. But yeah, it was time to, you know, do some risk management and put a big girl pants on and deal with that situation.
So tell us about coaching and the Law Life Success Code and what all that has come to be.
We'll be right back.
Hey guys, we want to take a moment to talk about something that has been a game changer for us busy lawyers, Audible.
Yes, Audible has been our go-to platform for incredible audiobooks, offering an extensive library of thrillers, nonfiction, autobiographies, and mysteries.
And guess what? We've got a special treat for you. Audible is offering a free trial to our listeners, and all you need to do is check the link in the show notes. It's the perfect opportunity to experience the magic of audiobooks without spending a dime.
Speaking of thrillers, I know you are currently hooked on Never Lie by Freda McFadden. Samantha, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. The twists and turns in Never Lie have kept me on the edge of my seat during the workday and even when I'm on my daily walks. It's like having a suspenseful companion wherever I go.
And for those looking for some financial wisdom, I have been engrossed in My Money, My Way by Kamuku Love. It's packed with practical advice on managing finances, perfect for anyone trying to navigate the complexities of money management.
What we love most is the flexibility Audible offers. As lawyers, our schedules can be unpredictable, but with Audible, we can enjoy our favorite books on the go, whether we're stuck in traffic, hitting the gym, or waiting for a court hearing.
So, if you're ready to embark on a literary journey and discover the joys of audiobooks, click the link in the show notes to start your free trial with Audible. Trust us, you won't want to miss out on this fantastic offer.
Yeah, so it's really connected to the pandemic situation because obviously I didn't have a business and I wanted to have a business. So what I did, I started a private compliance consultancy with respect to privacy because that was what I was mostly focusing on for the past 2 years. In Europe, we have very strict privacy rules, as you might know. So I was doing that on the side. And then I was just sharing my experiences on Instagram. I started to, especially when the pandemic hit, since I was really big on personal development, since I was already working with coaches myself, and I was having some quote-unquote coaching clients, which is people from my community that I was helping to advance in career. I just started on Instagram, prepared a little freebie, prepared a little funnel, and it just started naturally, I would say organically grow. And I think 2 years after when I was running my private compliance privacy practice, I was again at the crossroad. And I knew I wanted to grow my business. My Airbnb business was back on track, so that was fine. But I really wanted to grow the business. And I could decide either I'm going to grow the coaching business or I'm going to grow the compliance privacy practice. And I've decided for coaching business because I didn't want to work more. I didn't want to hire anybody and take the responsibility. And I just wanted to continue the entrepreneurial journey. And I knew I would have more freedom with coaching, obviously. So that's how I started. So this is from like the entrepreneur perspective of how I started a coaching business. Now, what I'm doing, I technically started as a general life coaching, right? That was what I was doing. I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just helping people and it worked. And then eventually I realized the pattern that I'm helping lawyers. The most of the people that came to me were lawyers. They're like, okay, you're successful. You were a very successful lawyer. You're an entrepreneur now. You have a daughter. You're taking time off. You're taking care of yourself. How do you do that? And so I started to coach, especially women, especially around 30, especially early in their leadership roles, around how to increase their value in a company, how to take better care of themselves while still growing their career. Because I think this is so important to say. I see so much of misinformation on Instagram or online about how you should take care of yourself, about self-care, about balance. And it always portrays the choice as between the career and yourself. And I'm a proof that it's possible to have both. I have amazing family. I am taking care of myself. I'm working out daily. I have a career. I'm making money. It is possible. It's not easy. You have to be intentional. You have to have strategy. So going back to how it started with coaching, I started to develop a methodology because I'm very organized. I'm very pragmatic, very analytical. I'm like, this has to be a certain format. There has to be a system in this. So yeah. I started to gather from the hours and hours of coaching calls and sessions that I've had with my clients, I started to gather all the intel, all the insights, and I started to put it in a methodology that later became Law Life Success Code or Law Life Method, as I call it now. And it was just really, again, very natural progress. It came, I would say it came from bottom up rather than top down. So it wasn't something that one day I sat down and I'm like, I'm going to be coach and this is what I'm going to do and this is what I tell people. It was more, this is what I was doing. People came to me and the questions and the answers and the results that they have really created this methodology. And last year I hired a business coach because I saw I'm onto something. This could work. This could make money. And also this could make an impact. I could really help lawyers in similar situations. So how can I make it clear? How can I make it better? And I created the whole Law Life Method, the Law Life System program. So I really kind of own the fact that I'm coaching just lawyers. It was very scary business decision. But again, I knew that the difficult business decisions are always the right decisions for me, or how it has been right, have been right decisions for me. So this is how I basically started to coach exclusively lawyers and exclusively around the questions, how you build career without sacrifice on your personal life.
You said that most of your clients were women and, you know, in their 30s, kind of like in their beginning of their careers or middle of the careers. Is that still the demographic that you work with today?
Yes, more or less. But I also have older women. I also have very young lawyers who want to have just the basic coaching around career, although I'm not necessarily career coach, because obviously, as you know, being a lawyer means different things in different countries. The paths are different. So I'm not specifically focusing on advising somebody how to grow their career. It's always a life coaching, but it's mostly focused on growing, sort of working on yourself to grow your career. And yes, most of my clients right now, I would say, are still around 30s. And usually there are people or women who want to grow in their career into leadership roles, because this is where the whole burnout came. This is something I forgot actually to mention when you asked me about burnout. The major, I would say, trigger for the burnout was the fact that I became from senior legal counsel, a legal and compliance manager. And the responsibility shifted, but also the way I was working should have shifted, but it didn't. I was less hands-on and I was supposed to be more high level, more managerial, obviously being a leader. And I was still working as a hands-on senior counsel. Right. And I think this is exactly the time when it's the first time in your career after that initial rush of motivation and inspiration, when you're willing to put in hours, they're willing to sacrifice. You're 30 now and you start to realize like there has to be more to life. I don't feel like this is exactly what I want. Maybe I want to start a family. I want more social life. I want to travel more. And I think this is around this mark, lawyers start to demand more from their careers because they realize it's not just about the work. It's not just about the hours they put in, but they need a better strategy to be more seen, more heard, more respected, to grow their career. And it's not just about the hard work. The hard work is, you know, the non-negotiable, is the baseline. Everybody in a profession, if they want to achieve something, need to work hard, but then you need something extra to stand out and to get that promotion or to get in a leadership role. And so I think all of these factors probably influence the fact that why women at that stage feel compelled to, okay, how can I work on myself more? I know the legal stuff. I know how to draft a contract, or I know how to write a memo, but I don't know how to take care of myself. I don't know how to position myself. I don't know how to advocate for myself in the company.
So what would you say is your piece of advice for the 30-year-old, maybe late 20-year-old lawyer who is advancing in their career, who is looking to get a leadership role? You know, what are things that you would recommend to your potential client, right? But also to someone who is trying to prepare themselves and be, you know, get set up in the best way to transfer into a leadership role maybe a few years down the road?
Yeah, I love the question. So I would first of all say get a clarity. So really understand what you want, because I think many times we want to be manager or we want to be promoted, but what it really means, which kind of role, in which kind of company, under which circumstances. And I think without that clarity of what you actually want to achieve, it's going to be very hard to achieve it. I always say the reason why self-care or time for yourself always slip down the priority list is because it's not clear. And there's a concrete demand of your client, very concrete deadline, very concrete email. And if on the other side you have, I want to work out more, that's not concrete enough for you to be like, right now I'm going to drop this and I'm going to work out more. It's just not happening if you're in legal profession. And you probably know because you're nodding. So I can imagine that you've probably been there. And so I would say the first step will just really be clear about what do I want? Is it something I want or is it something I should want? Is it a must for me? Is it a should? Because last thing you want is to achieve a goal that doesn't satisfy you. It's not the right fit for you. So that would be kind of a first step. And then more on the practical side, I would definitely recommend to be working on both your legal skills, obviously that are relevant for the role that you're aiming at, but also on your personal skills, especially communication, especially presentation, especially how you're perceived by other people, how you groom yourself, how big of an authority you are. What really helped me, now I'm going from coach to kind of sharing my personal experience, what really helped me was writing academic articles. I had very early on in my career, my own blog about internet law, because I did an LLM in internet law. And this was something, even though it was a tiny blog, small leadership, readership, but every single interview I had, people were, or the partners or the seniors were asking about it. They were impressed. I literally, when I was hiring for my team, I had a person who came to the interview and he was a fan of that blog. And he was, the blog inspired him to pursue the internet and like privacy law. And that's why he applied for a role in my team and then he was accepted. So even small things, even things that are, especially now with internet and social media, there are so many ways you can go over and above just your day-to-day job. So I would think of very creative ways of how I can stand out. And then obviously we all know the word networking. And I hated it when I was a lawyer. I would say network, not just for the sake of it, obviously just going to conferences, but really network within the company. So if you're in-house, network with people from other departments, with your internal clients, with your boss, but also with your colleagues, because they're going to become your potential team. This was my mistake that I did. Since I was so competitive, I saw everybody on my team as a competitor. And that created a very toxic relationship between me and them when I was promoted, because we didn't like each other. And that was a huge, and I would say the biggest mistake I did as a leader, that I undermined the power of relationship, not just with higher ups, but with my peers. And I didn't invest any time or effort and energy and focus on those relationships with my peers. I only focused on CEO and CFO and the manager and CMO. And I had great relationships with them. They appreciated me, but my team didn't like me or respect me when I became their manager. So I would say be very creative also in the way you network and with who you network, because you need to be very strategic. And then I would say the last thing is to really take good care of yourself, because being a leader also requires you to have an emotional management, the stress management. You have to make decisions, hard decisions, fast. And this is something that you might not need to do when you're just a senior, when you're just an associate or a lawyer. And you have to be really mentally tough and resilient to do that. And you're not going to be that resilient and mentally ready to do it when you are on the edge of burnout, when you are constantly dysregulated, when your nervous system is in shambles, when your cortisol levels are high. So really take good care of yourself, and that will translate not just into how you feel and feel fulfilled in your life, if that's too rare for you, but it has a very concrete, and it's study and research based. It's going to have a concrete impact and result in your career. There are studies after studies that prove that people who are fit, people who take care of themselves, people who are more confident because of workout, progress in career faster. And this is also something that I underestimated. And then the second time around, when I was eyeing my next promotion, I completely overhauled my strategy and focused on myself first. And that was really such a big difference.
And I guess a lot of what you said could also apply to, like, for example, the clarity, finding clarity on what you want. That could also apply to, you know, as young as law students, right? Trying to figure out from that early on part, like, what am I wanting to do? And maybe even preventing from going into, you know, certain roles or stuff like that. So I think that advice was really good. Thank you.
I would also say, just specifically for the law students, what also makes sense is to find a mentor. So find somebody who is in a role that you would like to have or aspire to, and maybe reach out to them on LinkedIn or via email, and just kind of make a compelling case why they should care about you, offer something in exchange, do something for free for them, or whatever the situation. But be mentored by them. And if they're not willing to mentor you, because obviously they might not be willing to mentor you, then just model somebody. You can model somebody kind of by reverse engineering their life and career. So like I had my professional crush, this particular person, and I really like their career. I like what they're doing. And we actually was lucky that I could collaborate with them on their, they had like a think tank and I was working for free for them. It was great. But at the same time, I literally look at their CV and I analyze every single point on that CV. And I was thinking, okay, what they were doing here, what was probably the reason why they got the job? And then I look at every single aspect on their CV, and I obviously didn't do the same thing, but I try to mirror it to my life. Okay, this person had an internship in Southeast Asia. Can I have an internship in Southeast Asia? This person had this master degree. Can I have a similar master degree? And I kind of reverse engineered their career and created my own career path by myself without them having to actually proactively mentor me. So I don't think it's not an excuse to say that somebody is not helping you or somebody's not replying. Sometimes you just have to take the matter in your own hands.
Such great advice. Thank you so much, Dominika.
Thank
you. Can you tell the listeners where they can find you after this, if they want to chat or follow you or, you know, learn more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to stay in touch. So I'm active on Instagram, and that's very easy. It's at Dominika Fasolo. It's just basically my name. I'm active there every day. I show my behind the scenes of my life and business. But on mostly when it comes to my content, I give very concrete advice and tips on how to combine career and life when you're a lawyer specifically, how to be more productive, how to have more self-care. And it's all there. So this is like the first step you can take. And if you're interested in this.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm sure our listeners are going to want to follow you and get to know more about you. Yeah, we're so excited to introduce you to them.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Haley, for having me. It was really a big pleasure to be here today.
I'm going to get some clarity on what I want to do when I grow up. No,
that's what kidding. I was thinking the whole time. You know how like literally what 2 weeks ago we had an episode where I was, you know, talking about my kind of like thoughts.
Career, transferring from the law.
Just like the all of my thoughts. Yeah. Like, and it's definitely something that I personally have been wanting to find is like clarity, right? And the professional crush, right? I think I need to find a professional crush. I think also sometimes it's, for me at least, it's kind of scary to like find someone you really like and then like see all the work that they did to get there and be like, oh my God, like, can I do that? Like, you know?
But so, yeah, you totally can. You totally can. You just have to, sometimes we get so nervous of failing, but we don't realize that right on the other side of that token is success. So you have to push past that fear a little bit. That's what separates, you know, the girls from the women, as they say. And professional crush, right? Like that was such a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And I feel like they probably change as you go through your career. And
oh, for sure. I mean, I think mine, I mean, I don't really have like a specific person I can think about, right? Like that's my professional crush. But I think I have an idea of who that would be. Like just like not even a specific like name. I don't even know their name, right? It's just like
what they
do. Persona, right? I can kind of see like the type of person that, you know. So I think there's, I need to sit down, get more clarity. She made it. Clear that that's something we got to start with.
No, for sure. Also, it's so cool to know that she helps women who want to transfer into leadership roles, which is something that, you know, I feel like maybe eventually that'll be us. And it was just so great to meet her and chat with her. And, you know, oh my gosh, when she mentioned the part about being pregnant and collapsing and you know,
and honestly, like, I don't doubt that that happens. I mean, it happens
more than people.
More than people. I mean, I think if you guys want more kind of stories like that, go to Law Firm Reddit or Lawyer Talk Reddit and just search like pregnant. And like, you'll see stories of women at law firms or in-house or, you know, in the legal field in general and the experiences that they have of, you know, just stress and the, you know, being pregnant puts a whole nother level to it, right?
Yeah.
And then there's some really scary stories out there of what stress can do to your body. And like she said, you're taking care of someone else at that point, at 8.5 months pregnant, literally.
Well, you know, eventually like, it catches up to you, right? You aren't the same person. And I think that that was very evident in the story was that she's operating at the same level, but she added in something new and just not pretended, but you know, you have to make some changes. And I really, really appreciated her vulnerability with us. I mean, she was just such a cool guest. And if you like this episode, make sure and leave us a review and tell us how much you like Dominika.
Yes. And if you're really feeling generous, share this with a friend who might need some clarity and just needs someone to tell them that they need clarity, especially that friend that's like me, who doesn't know what they want to do with their life. So send it to a friend, share it on your Instagram story. We love seeing you guys do that. Obviously, follow us on Instagram at The Ladies Who Law Podcast. I'm sure you guys saw our cute little reel, our acting. I don't know. We're working on it. Okay.
We're definitely working on
it. That was like a production, guys. So yeah, pretty expect much. More.
All right, guys. Well, we hope that you have a great week. We love you so much. We're sending you all the good vibes, and we will talk to you again next time. All right. Bye.
Bye.